You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out door.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar. And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to, yes it is, Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Thanks for tuning in. Nice to be back. I was gone for a couple weeks, I think. We had an archive last Sunday in honor of Ann Zimmerman's appearance with me at a benefit for the book festival, and I thought that was just a timely repeat. And then I was really sick the week before, and I'm not sure what we did. Anyway, we have a full house tonight. We have cheeses I'm starting to smell from Wyrock Farm with Joel and Carlene. And we also have sitting next to me, in addition to Joey, who is voicing his opinion, we have Leslie Braben. And you may have read in the Press Democrat, I think it was last Sunday, a story about a Salmon Creek Ranch that I had the pleasure of doing. And it's really a remarkable place. And the products from Salmon Creek Ranch are quite remarkable. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you, Michelle.
So I'm going to start with you because we're getting the cheeses still set up. So we're going to start with Salmon Creek Ranch. And I just want you to give me, I love the story of how you found it. And I just want you to give me a little background of how you ended up moving from Mill Valley up to Bodega, really, between Bodega and Bodega Bay.
Right, right. Well, my husband and I had always wanted to find a place in the country. He is from New Zealand and spent a lot of time growing up on a dairy farm and was very familiar with all of that work. And then my family has a ranch in Southern California, in Oxnard, to be specific, that actually I own part of it now with my cousins and manage it. It's crops. So we've been around tractors and dirt our whole lives, and we wanted our own little piece of dirt. So once our children were kind of on their own paths, we started looking in earnest. And we'd looked in New Zealand, in Canada, which is where I was born, and we've looked in Vancouver area, Washington, Oregon, and then we found this piece of property in Sonoma County that we just fell in love with. So that was 4 years ago. We bought it, which was quite remarkable in itself.
And it's what, 600 acres?
It's 400 acres.
400 acres. That's right. Yes. The original parcel
right.
was 600.
Right. So since then, we've been trying to make it back into a working ranch, and it's been really exciting.
And successful.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I mean, your products, we're seeing your duck on menus. Your duck eggs are really popular. And you now have introduced grass-fed beef.
That's right, yes. And goat meat, too.
That's right, goat meat.
Goat meat is becoming very, very popular.
Yes.
So
yeah, the goat meat is wonderful. But I have to say, your grass-fed beef is some of the best I've ever tasted.
Oh,
it's really
you.
Quite extraordinary, especially for somebody who's not used to, like if you go from mainstream beef to a cut of yours, the difference is truly remarkable. There's a cleanness on the palate, pristine quality that you don't get in standard commercial beef.
I can't help but think it's because where we're located, we're so isolated. We're in the middle on this 400-acre parcel, in the middle of huge ranches, and we're 2 miles from the sea. It's so pristine. The fog comes in. Mm-hmm. It's just so remarkable. And the cows have free range now of the entire ranch. So they can go where they want, eat what they want. They find what they need. And they do very well.
And they're all Scottish Highland.
We have some Scottish Highlanders.
Oh, and you have others as well?
And we have some Angus Crosses as well.
Oh, you do? Okay, I didn't see the Angus Crosses when I was there.
It's kind of hard to get past those shaggy faces and see what's behind them.
Yeah, really beautiful. So right now, what are the products that you're selling? And I know that some go around the country and some go to chefs, but at the farmer's market on Saturday in Santa Rosa and Thursday
on Thursdays in
Mill Valley? I mean, San Rafael.
San Rafael, right. We have 100% certified organic duck eggs. We also supply 10 Whole Foods markets in the greater Bay Area with the duck eggs, as well as a couple of independents. We have... Occasionally we have goat meat. Goat meat has become so popular that when we do have a goat slaughtered, it sells out almost immediately. We've started working with Franco Dunn to make goat sausage, and that's doing very well as well.
Yes, I had some of the goat mirgaz.
Yes.
Quite good.
Yes, and we also have Lukanika.
Right.
Greek sausage. We have... and the grass-fed beef.
Mm-hmm.
And the duck, the Muscovy duck, is pasture-raised, certified organic up until the day of slaughter. Mm-hmm. And that was our first thing that we started raising.
Mm-hmm. When I first discovered you, the thing that caught my attention immediately at the farmer's market was the little sign for pet treats.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, as a new... dog owner, or whatever you want to call it, I'm always looking for things that will fit in his little mouth, because he's a miniature dachshund. And I got him some of the duck necks, which are the perfect thing. They're really healthy, really good for them, and they love them.
Yeah, they do, because we're dog lovers from way back. I've been breeding and showing dogs for over 45 years now, and I'm also an AKC licensed judge. I've judged dogs all over the world, and so we needed to fit the dogs into our enterprise. And plus, we didn't want to waste any part of the animals that we're raising. So quite a few of our friends feed raw, you know, the raw diets. Mm-hmm. So we thought, well, why not? We know that from reading nutritional articles for dogs that like duck feet are great for pets because the cartilage is really good for their bones and joints.
Mm-hmm.
And then the necks, there's very sinewy tissue on the duck and chicken necks that's like dental floss for dogs. And the bones just crunch. They don't get stuck or splinter, because if they're not cooked, they don't splinter.
Right. Yeah, and I'm one of those. I switched my dog to a raw diet in May. And a good part of that is the duck necks.
Oh, excellent.
In fact, I'm going home this evening and making another batch. And it's been very interesting to go from somebody who has cats, and exclusively cats, and wouldn't even consider a dog, to having this dog and watching the change that he's gone through as I've changed his diet. And it's just been really quite remarkable.
What have you found?
Well, he would have digestive upset every now and then, and that's kind of messy.
Yes.
You know, and there have been times I take his, he sleeps with me. He would wake me up 3 or 4 times in a night to take him outside, and that's a little bit difficult. But he would have died. In fact, he ended up in the hospital about a year ago, and I learned a lot then about how pet hospitals run now, nearly $1,000 later. He was still alive, but it was some sort of bacterial infection in his gut. And that was, I mean, oh, he was on IV antibiotics. I mean, we almost lost him. His fever was almost 106. So he was in the hospital overnight and then on antibiotics for 2 weeks. And then just in talking to a couple people and doing a lot of reading, I switched him abruptly. And he has not had 1 minute of intestinal upset at all. His poop is different. Somebody told me, he says, one of the things you're going to find out is that, you know, there will be no odor and it will not attract flies. And that's absolutely true. Does not attract flies, and there's no bad aroma. In fact, there's just about no aroma, and it sort of turns grayish white and blows away after a couple days. It's just the weirdest thing. So now I'm wondering what I can do to switch my cats, which is going to be a harder sell.
Well, when you think about it, dogs are meant to be carnivores, and yeah, that's what they're designed to eat.
Just raw food outside.
Absolutely. So it's the best thing for them.
Yeah, and he's getting everything he eats is from within 3 or 4 miles of where we live in Sebastopol, because I have, you know, stuff from you and stuff from Victorian Farmstead and a couple of other local producers. And I mean, he doesn't eat much, so it's not, I mean, 4.5 ounces a day, you know, feeds the little guy. So, and plus some organic vegetables go into it. So, but it's been really interesting. At some point, I'm going to do a column on it, because
excellent.
I think if you have any problems with your pet's, you know, digestive system, this really seems to be a great way to go.
That's excellent.
So anyway, I want to bring, actually, we're going to take a quick musical break because we have a very tiny little technical thing to work out. So we will be right back with more talk here on Mouthful.
Tips his hat and walks towards the door. It's the second half of the cruise, and you know he hates to lose.
Hey, hey, Cripple Creek Ferry, butting through the overhanging trees. Make way for the Cripple Creek Ferry, the water's going down. A mighty tight squeeze. Hey, hey, Cripple Creek Ferry, buddy.
Okay, technology problem solved. We are just fine. It's Michelle Jordan here on Mouthful. I'm in the studio with Leslie Braben of Salmon Creek Ranch, and also Joel and Carlene Wyrock of Wyrock Ranch. You may know them from the Sebastopol Farmers Market. Are you at any other farmers markets?
Yeah, we're at the Fairfax Market.
Oh, Fairfax, okay.
And
that's right,
the Civic
talked about
Center.
That.
Yeah.
Civic Center on
Thursday mornings.
Oh,
yeah.
So you're both there.
Right.
Okay. You have a creamery.
Yes.
And a dairy.
Our dairy is about halfway finished.
Okay. I first met you when you were selling your fabulous sheep milk soap. Was that 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
I think we've been at the Sebastopol market for about 5 years now.
No.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's true.
I know. Well, so tell us how things all started. Actually, first of all, tell us where you are. Like, you know, are you in Pengrove?
We're in Petaluma.
Oh, you're in Petaluma. Okay.
We're tenants on a 60-acre organic certified ranch.
Mm-hmm. What part of Petaluma?
East side, at the base of Sonoma Mountain.
Okay.
Our landlords are Dulcinis, and they have a pastured egg business.
So you're right there with all those chickens.
We are. We're surrounded by chickens. They're lovely. Actually, the chickens are like the vacuum cleaners for the entire ranch. Mm-hmm. They really do a great job of taking care of, you know, potential parasite problems, and the Dulcinis run their cattle, and we of course have our flock of sheep, and so we just rotate all the animals. It's really a great system.
Now, when you say that they have a pastured egg business,
right.
What do they sell? What label do they sell their eggs under? Where do they sell them?
Tully Dulce.
Tully Dulce.
Tully Dulce Farms, and they sell exclusively at the Marin Civic Center.
Yeah.
And geez, they sell out in an hour and a half.
Really?
200 dozen.
Yeah,
you know, that farmer's market, eggs. That farmer's market, too, is amazing. They're right. So, it's just a huge population
right.
there.
It's business.
Yeah. So, you started, you have sheep. You wanted sheep?
Right. Mm-hmm. They're dairy sheep.
Mm-hmm. What breed?
They're, the first sheep we got were East Frisian. It's a dairy breed, and they were the first breed introduced into the country. And recently, we've acquired some Lacone Frisian cross, and Lacone are the French breed that they make Roquefort from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we have enough sheep now. We just need to finish the milking parlor.
Yeah. So let's explain the requirement of that, because you, even though you have sheep and they're producing milk, you're using it to make your soap, right?
Right.
Right. Because we can hand milk in the field.
Right.
Use that milk,
but you
but
can't
not for human consumption.
You can't hand milk for human consumption.
You can hand milk, but it has to be in a inspected dairy, or, you know, we call it quaintly a milking parlor.
Milking parlor,
and,
yes.
Right. And so we have a county dairy inspector who inspects that particular facility.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like a cow dairy, it's a space where the animals come into. It's usually a, you know, a covered building of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And ours happens to be a retrofitted mobile classroom.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's our...
So you're going to have really smart sheep.
That's right. Very smart sheep. So that was our creative solution to, you know, investing in infrastructure on land that we're just leasing.
Right.
So...
Yeah. And so you say about half done?
Right, yeah. We're doing all the construction, all the development ourselves. Mm-hmm. So
he says Joel's doing all the construction.
Right. So in between making cheese and tending the sheep and doing the markets, mm-hmm. I get about a day and a half to do construction on the milking parlor right now.
Yeah. We were really trying to complete the milking parlor in time for this season's sheep milk, but we realized it just wasn't going to pan out. So we gave ourselves a break, gave ourselves permission just to make our cow milk cheese initially. And so the sheep milk season begins in springtime, so about March.
Mm-hmm.
We look forward to.
And so you think for the next for 2012?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So the parlor will be done in the next, you know, month or two.
Oh, okay,
so,
great.
Yeah.
Great. So tell us about your sheep milk. I mean, your cow's milk cheese.
Well, right now we're getting organic cow milk from John Taverna in Chileno Valley, and kind of experimenting, seeing what comes out from our aging room. It's a new environment, and so cheeses are gonna, you know, seek their own balance. And so we're having a lot of experiments, I guess. You know, so there's a lot of failed cheeses, but there's a few that are coming out good.
What's your background in cheese? I mean, what did you do before you decided you were going to be
a cheesemaker? Well, I spent a lot of years cooking.
Cooking?
And
professionally?
Yeah. And I developed a skin allergy and had to get out of the kitchen.
Really?
I was on my hands. So I went back to school, and I didn't really have a direction.
Mm-hmm.
But I was gravitating towards science classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was up in Washington, and I was studying mycology. And I kept thinking about you know, mushrooms and bacteria and how it relates to food. And so I was investigating all kinds of fermentation, you know, sauerkraut and cheese was on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my professors was a French historian. And I was talking to her about it, and she said, well, let's write a program and send you to France.
Oh, wow.
So for my senior year.
Uh-huh. Now, what college was this?
This was Evergreen State College.
Uh-huh.
So it was a real integrated, you know, study program. So I got together with her and a couple other professors and wrote a program and went to France for a year.
Did you already speak French?
I had taken French in high school.
Okay.
But I had to learn really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of these farmers, quite a few people in France speak English, but a lot of the farmers in the rural regions don't speak any English, let alone, you know, Parisian French.
Yeah, well, you know, you're really following in the spirit of Laura Chanel.
All right.
Because, you know, she loved goats. She had goat milk and was making not very good cheeses.
Yeah.
Right.
And nobody was, I mean, she was a member of the goat community here in the 70s. And she went, I think it was maybe a semester, she did not speak French, and she went to Sonoma State and then went and stayed at one farm after another in France. And I just thought that was just such a courageous thing to do when you're so new to the language.
Yeah.
So that's great. What a great story.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I went over there actually with the intention of learning more about goat cheeses. Mm-hmm. But once I tasted some of the sheep cheeses, I was just blown away.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that not many people were producing sheep cheeses here.
Right. And there's no reason we can't, is right?
Well, no, you're right. But dairy sheep were just introduced into this country in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a relatively new
endeavor. Cindy Callahan and Bellwether Farm, she was, I think, the first person
in California.
Certainly in California, and I'd heard the first person west of the Mississippi, maybe.
Probably.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Yeah, somebody I heard about.
It all just sort of blossomed right about the same time.
Yes.
So it was 1994, I think, the first dairy sheep, you know, genetics were brought in and maybe dispersed to a couple of locations in the...
Sally Jackson up in Washington was making cheeses pretty early on, too.
Mm-hmm. I remember I was in Italy. And the little podera where we were staying had some connections with Northern California. They said, oh, yeah, there's some crazy woman up in Napa or something who thinks she's going to make goat cheeses. She was just here.
Yeah.
And that was Cindy.
Nate.
That's so funny. Well, Cindy's our, you know, she's our superhero, of course.
They've done an amazing job.
They really
just
have.
Just amazing. So you have this beautiful board here of cheeses. So why don't you talk about what these are?
I went from... Yeah, whatever.
Right. Okay. So this is right here is just a fresh wheel. It's called a Tom Fresh, and we're serving it fresh. It's a cheese that can be aged, but we're finding a lot of people at the markets are loving it real fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh meaning young.
Yes.
Young.
But, so not fresh as opposed to
sassy.
Yeah. A little over the hill.
Right. The condiment could be fresh. But yeah, this particular cheese that Joel's describing, the Tom Fresh, is about 13 days old. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's... what's the question I want to ask? How is it made? What makes it into what it is?
In French you would say pat non cuite, which means it's a pressed curd, but it's a non-cooked curd.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in the family of the semi-soft cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
The Alpine style cheeses are cooked curd cheeses, so they're meant to be aged longer.
Longer.
So this one we really haven't done much to. We just take it out of the vat and mold it, press it, and put it into a brine and put it on a shelf and turn it every few days for
saltwater brine. How long does it spend in the saltwater brine?
12 to 16 hours.
I'm pretty sure. I'm not positive, and I'm pretty sure that this is the one that Lucas, who is 10, when he tasted this, said, "This is the best cheese I've ever tasted."
That's right. I think you're right. I have a really cute picture of him.
Oh, really?
One of those days of you two. Yeah.
Yes. He considers himself an official cheese taster. And given that he's loved cheese since his first bite, I defer to him.
That's great. I think children actually give us the greatest feedback. It's so honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And especially so if you haven't messed up their palate with you know,
junk food.
Junk food, yeah. And think Lunchables and all the fake foods that people think kids want.
Right. You know? The stimulant foods or whatever.
Yeah, if you just give them like actual real foods, I think they have those beautiful pure palates. So I want to take a nibble.
Yeah, go
Please
for it.
Do.
And Leslie, yes, you too, jump in. Now, one thing I loved when I was out at your farm, Leslie, because we can, anything you want to ask, just jump into this conversation, was what you said about your husband, and that when you were looking for a ranch property, he knew he didn't want anything that needed to be milked.
That's right. He's a smart man. And knew how much work it is.
So, right. Mm-hmm. Colleen, do you do the milking?
Of the
sheep.
Well, you know, we both have over the years. Uh-huh. And certainly Joel taught me how to milk the sheep. Mm-hmm. Really, you know. I raised sheep as a kid, but I raised meat sheep here in Sonoma County. I mean, it was just, it would be insane to think of milking a sheep, you know. And so, I mean, it's just, it's a lovely experience. And although I'm really looking forward to using our new dairy and all of its fancy equipment, albeit very small scale, it won't be the same as just sort of resting my head on, you know, on the belly of the sheep and, you know, early in the morning. And
how long does it take to milk a single sheep?
Just a few minutes. If you're good at it. And with the milking machine, I mean.
Oh, yeah, with the milk. Yeah, but I mean by hand.
Yeah.
4 or 5 minutes?
Yeah, if you're really good at it.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I figure there's a motion that I think you need to.
You kind of get in the groove.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot has to do with just the animal's comfortability with you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if your hands are too cold and you're too, you know, just imagine somebody grabbing you. And so.
you need a level of trust.
Yes, right.
Okay, so back to these cheeses. So that's the fresh tome.
Right.
Okay.
We have two here. The ones in the middle are, these are both made with cow milk again. And it's a lactic curd. So most people are familiar with the lactic curd from Laura Chanel's cheese, the Chev. Mm-hmm. And it's made in that style. It's where the milk is fermented anywhere from 24 to 36 hours and then molded and drained. So most people at the market come up and see this cheese and think it's a goat cheese.
They're little. They look about the size of one of her fresh Chevs. And one is that parsley?
No, it's Herbe de Provence.
Oh, Herbe de Provence from here. Yeah, I'm a ways away from it. So I just see green. So Herbe de Provence mixed with?
Just
straight Herbe de Provence.
Oh, okay. So it absorbs moisture from
there. Right.
And then the other one is harissa.
Harissa, yeah. And Carlene actually came up with the topping for that one. We had seen these French cheeses, and they were so colorful, and we thought we wanted to do something like that, but they were just covered with paprika, and we thought that was fairly one-dimensional. So
we did, you know,
here on the West Coast, we love the hot stuff,
right?
Love harissa. Harissa is one of the best things in the world. Do you make your own?
We don't. We actually buy it right now, but I would love to create our own. Actually, West County Herb Company has created the Herbes de Provence blend for us for our. That particular one, the green one. Mm-hmm. Those are all Sonoma County herbs on there. I just love that.
Very good. You know, and one of the things that's nice, I mean, this is very nice on its own. It's a nice cheese. Mm-hmm. But there are some people who really don't like goat.
Yeah.
They don't like that goaty barnyard.
Sure.
Undertaste,
right,
and texture. My daughter is one of them, and this is very similar in style to some of those cheeses. So I think it would make those people happy,
right? Well, it makes me happy because although I love the goat, I'm kind of embarrassed to say that my palate doesn't do well with that flavor. I'm delighted by this personally.
And Liv K. Fisher didn't much care for goat cheese. She thought it tasted like dirt.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I can see what she was referring to. Mm. I guess I like dirt.
Yeah, that dirt is a wonderful flavor, but yeah.
So that's very nice, but now I want to taste the, I can't reach it, I want to taste the harissa. Mm-hmm. So I just want to taste it when I'm not distracted. I've certainly tasted it several times, but I'm always distracted at the farmer's market, so I want to see the heat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're finding this one, we're snacking a lot with the fresh tomatoes in the marketplace right now with a little bit of basil in a sandwich. It's pretty good.
That definitely has some heat on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really nice. It's really, really a nice flavor. Mm-hmm. It has I think it's got just a little bit of caraway under there, because some people make their harissa without caraway, but I like the kinds that have it.
Right. So, although I don't know much about the history of the harissa spice blend, I mean, I know it's an ancient one, and part of what attracts, I think, us to it is that it has a really well-rounded flavor profile, which enhances this very kind of simple, tangy cheese, you know, and so it kind of adds and fills out the dimension. You know, you have three types of peppers in this, so you have hot and sweet, and cumin and coriander and salt, and you know, it kind of hits a lot of places.
Yeah, so. And sometimes in, you know, it's North African, and served with Moroccan tagines and stews and that sort of thing. It's like the it almost serves the same role in Moroccan cuisine as salsa does in Mexican cuisine. But in addition to it, you will often have yogurt. Maybe in the same dish on the table, so there's a resonance that's similar with that.
Right,
so I think that's
fresh.
One of the reasons that it works really nicely.
Right. Oh, that's interesting.
And then you could make it. You could get some of Salmon Creek Ranch's goat merguez.
Yes.
Grill a merguez. Get a nice baguette or something and smear some of the harissa cheese on there and plop the goat cheese. I mean the goat sausage with some fresh cilantro. You're rocking it.
Sounds good.
Yummy. Okay. I'm coming to your place for dinner. And Michelle can cook for us.
I'd be happy to sometimes. And then we have a fourth cheese.
Yeah.
Right. And this is a cheese we're calling Briny. Somehow all our cheese names are pirate themed. We didn't purposefully mean that. But.
I saw one today at the market, Salty Dog.
Yeah, Salty Dog and Doubloon.
So tell us about Briny.
Briny is a saltwater washed cheese.
Saltwater.
Saltwater washed. So it's a, you know, it's just a, it's a brine washed cheese, and we were going for something that would that the rind was edible and supple. Yet I think it's the rind's drying out a little too much, and that's just the way our aging room is acting. So we have to kind of learn to work with that.
Grab a little piece here.
So Joel has just been working feverishly on these aged cheeses, and you know, although
it's very nice.
Although we're selling we're happy, you know, for the most part, they're still not where we want them to be. So we really look forward to really working with, you know, the community and our customers and kind of evolving these aged cheeses. You know, we really need the feedback. You know, some of these, not this particular one, but some of them, some of the aged cheeses are developing some bitter qualities. And so it's really, we had, we feel like, ew, yuck, you know, I don't like that aftertaste. But at the same time, we just had a French woman come by the farm yesterday, and she thought that that was great. So, you know.
How many different kinds of cheeses are you making now?
Well,
just a few, you know. I mean, these two it's a variation of the same cheese.
Yeah, the Tome, right. And you do another one, don't you? You do the beer washed,
right? And that's just this cheese washed with beer
instead of brine.
Yeah, we're just experimenting to see what happens when we wash the rind with beer or salt water, and how it reacts in our aging room. One of the things we did in our aging room is we plastered the walls with a lime plaster to try to mimic a cave. A lot of the traditional cheeses in France are aged in limestone caves. So there's a symbiotic relationship between bacteria and molds and the cheeses and the limestone. So our cave is only a quarter filled. And it'll age cheeses better when it's completely filled. It'll reach its own balance and create its own
atmosphere almost.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's a living ecosystem, a really good cave, in which, of course, you know, a three-month-old cave, limestone or not, in a mobile classroom trailer, you know, it's going to take some time.
Have you seen the film about, I'm not going to remember the name of it right now, but it's about the French nun?
Yeah, oh, the cheese nun.
We
the
met her. She, oh.
Yes, I met.
She's a rock star.
Yeah, I met her when she was...
Sister Luella.
I interviewed her, and we had her on the show. I mean, I recorded an interview with her. She was at a winery.
Kundi, yeah.
Was it Kunde? Yeah,
yeah, Kunde. They showed the film there.
Yes, it was Kunde.
That was one of our dates.
Okay. Oh, one of your early dates. Oh, that's so cute. So I thought the point that she was making, that if this whole codex thing were to go through, which is an international regulation to prevent the sale of any raw milk cheeses in the world, she was saying the film was basically exploring all of the bacteria that would become extinct.
Right.
So it was sort of a horrifying prospect. So she became my hero at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
I did an interesting experiment. I did two cheeses side by side, and they were, one was a pasteurized fresh cheese, and the other one was a raw milk fresh cheese. And I put them in our aging room. And within 2 days, the pasteurized cheese was covered with blue and black molds, whereas the raw milk cheese was completely white and unaffected by the environment. So, I mean, it was a perfect example of how strong the raw milk is. It has its own fortification. It's a, it's a vital milk.
Yeah. Now, are you gonna make any raw milk cheeses?
Yes. We've made a number of batches, and they're aging right now. So for us to legally sell a raw milk cheese, it needs to be aged 60 days.
60 days, right.
So we're going to have some that'll be a young raw milk cheese, and we'll have some similar to a Gruyere type, which will be aged, 6 to 8 months.
Uh-huh. And then what are your plans, if you know yet, and maybe you don't, and that's okay, for sheep's milk cheese? What styles are you looking at?
Raw milk, definitely. So there'll be a harder aged wheel.
So Joel, was making sheep cheese for our household, of course, for the last 8 years. And so that's been just lovely. But because we have our new facility that we're making it in and this new aging environment and all that, it's going to be a very different experience. But I'm hoping we get back to some of those early experiments, which were, I hate to say, like a manchego, because far better, of course.
But maybe,
but kind of a harder.
Reminiscent of some Spanish-style sheep's milk cheeses.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
You also gave me, did not sell me, but gave me a jar of sheep milk yogurt that I won't forget. It was so good. It was just so good. Do you think you might do that?
Well, you want to answer that question? Yeah.
Maybe
in the future.
Maybe in the future. There's some legal hurdles we need to overcome in order to make the yogurt.
Really?
It's a little different than cheese making, a friend of ours is now selling some sheep milk yogurt at the Santa Cruz market.
Oh, really?
And so I want to talk to her and find out, how she got through the hurdles. Because on a small scale, it's a little more difficult than it is to do it on a larger scale.
Yeah, and I think Bellwether has been very successful with their sheep milk yogurt, and it's so good.
It's delicious.
Right. One of the issues, I think, is they want you to have, first off, they want your dairy or your milking parlor to be grade A. Ours is grade B because the dairy inspector here decided that because it was being retrofitted from a trailer, he didn't want us to go to grade A. Well, it's just a construction formality. But, eventually over time, I guess we could maybe fight that and, work with it. From what I understand, I think with yogurts, they're wanting you to do all the packaging with a machine, and so no contact. So if there's some way to get around that, and not invest a couple $100,000 in a yogurt blurp packaging machine, that seals on the lid and all that.
Are those USDA regulations or county?
It's federal regulation.
USDA. So I believe Rebecca King of Garden Variety Cheese, who makes fabulous sheep milk cheese, I believe she's packaging in, larger quart-sized glass jars. So it could be a county also barrier, in terms of packaging.
And I think if we could get Americans used to buying yogurt in quart glass jars, we would be the better for it on many levels.
Right.
Look at this ridiculous little, when I want yogurt, when I'm going to, work with yogurt, I might end up buying six of those little things, and I look at all the packages, and it's like, give me a quart of yogurt.
Yeah.
Right.
So, there's so many commercials, people sitting there eating their little container of yogurt that tastes like strawberry jam or something, and that's just, that's one little small portion of what yogurt really is. Right. I think I like yogurt in a savory context anyway, and it just I love making yogurt cheese. But yeah. Yogurt in North African food is just so common and essential and delicious. And I really love North African style food. And now we have people making merguez. We're going to take a very quick little musical break and come back with more talk here on Mouthful.
Eat steak, eat steak, eat a big old steer. Eat steak, do we have one beer? Eat beef, 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 it's a mighty good food. It's a great day when I'm in the mood. Cowpokes will come from the near and far when you throw a few ribeyes on the farm. Roberta Duran ate two before a fight, cause it gives a mighty man an awful lot of mighty life. Eat steak, eat a big old steer. Eat steak, do we have one deer? Eat beef, 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 it's a mighty good food. It's a great A-meal when I'm in the mood. Eat meat, filet mignon. Eat meat, eat it all day long. Eat a few T-bones till you get your fill. Eat a New York cut, hot off the grill. Eat steak, eat a big old steer. Eat steak, do we have one? It's a mighty good food, it's a great A when I'm in the mood. Eat a cow, cause it's good for you. Eat a cow, it's a thing that goes moo. Slaughterhouse yard, gotta hit him in the head, gotta hit him real hard. First you gotta clean it, then the butcher cuts it up, throws it on a scale, throws an eyeball in a cup. Saw a big brave steer standing right over there, so I wrestled up a fire, cooked a medium rare. Barbecued his brisket and roasted his rump, fed my dog to the brave steer's hump. Eat steak, eat a big old steer. Eat steak, do we have one deer? Eat beef, 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 it's a mighty good food. It's a great A meal when I'm in the mood.
It's Mouthful. My guests this evening are from Y Rock Farm and Salmon Creek Ranch. We just heard Eat Steak from Reverend Horton Heat. And I have to say, if you're making a switch from conventional beef or conventional contemporary beef to grass-fed beef, you need to learn how to cook it. And I think that that is something. An increasing number of people are learning how, but it's changed so much over the last 5, 6, 7 years that it's been available. And Leslie, I was just thinking about yours. You gave me a ribeye. And I decided to experiment because I want to know. And it was very interesting. And I think I finally have it. I've cooked it 6 times now. And I time it each time. I time absolutely everything I do, and I think I finally have it down perfect.
Wow.
Perfect for my palate, I should say. But one thing for people who are squeamish about meat and they want to eat well done or medium well done, don't bother. You shouldn't. It's grass-fed meat, or certainly steak, I think really needs to be cooked hot and fast. And enjoyed rare. That's when you get all of the benefits of both the flavor and the texture. So that's what I've done. What I've done is I've heated a pan really hot, just over a high flame for several, until it's almost smoking. And then I put salt. I cover the pan with salt. And the steak has been nearly 1.5 inches thick. So I've cooked it at 2 minutes on per side, 2.5 minutes per side, and 3 minutes per side. And I found that 3 minutes per side is too much. 2.5 minutes, and then I turn it over another 2.5 minutes. And if it has a thick band of fat, which you should never cut off, it's full of really great nutrients, especially grass-fed. And then I just tip it on its end to cook the fat for about 1.5 to 2 minutes. And then I put it under a dome. Like a bowl, a metal bowl or a domed metal lid, and I let it sit for 3 minutes. And then I just put a little either kosher or Malden sea salt and a little black pepper, and it is absolutely perfect.
You are amazing.
Okay, so two and a half?
I found for an inch and a half thick steak, 2.5 minutes on extremely high heat. But then if there's a big piece of fat, then turn it on whatever end where that fat is for another extra minute or two. But I found at 3 minutes per side, it's cooked a little too much for my liking and my girl's liking. So, and then I also did, there's the guy who sells at a lot of farmers markets who has, it's called Wellbeing Farm, I think it is. Bohemian Wellbeing Farm. He sells mushrooms. And I'm nearly addicted to his, maitake. The maitake mushroom, the one that looks like a mushroom rose or something. The beef is, well, I'm getting the pan hot. I just, some shallots, a little bit of butter. I put the, I tear the mushroom into pieces, put the mushroom in, add a big splash of white wine, cover it, and then when it's the mushroom's nice and wilted, then I take the pan off, reduce it, put that beef on a plate, and put the mushrooms over it. Oh, it is, you have just the simplest, most delicious farmer's market meal right there.
This is what I love about this community, that there are people, it's about teamwork. It's about the producers that are coming up with the raw ingredients, like the meat and the cheese and all of that. And then it's people like you that can put it all together. And
people who cook, I mean, we're totally dependent. Cooking is never better than the ingredients you can get. And that's one of the amazing things about Sonoma County. We just have such fabulous farmers and ranchers and growers like you guys.
It's wonderful being at the farmers market. For one of the major reasons is talking to the customers and hearing what they do with the things that they get at the farmers market. They're so enthusiastic, and it makes you enthusiastic when you go home and have to slog through the mud and you think, oh, well, there was that person that really appreciated this duck, and that's why I'm out here slogging through the mud. So it's great.
Speaking of slogging through the mud, in our last bit of time, and I want both of you, all of you, to jump in, farming isn't easy. Ranching isn't easy. I mean, I won't even have chickens because I'm terrified. Of what? I mean, I'm in the country. God knows what wild critters I have. And I just can't stand the thought of having to go out and find, you know, a chicken that's been taken for another creature's meal. So I know it's really challenging, the weather. I'm enjoying our cool summer, but I'm feeling very guilty about it. So what do you all have to deal with to make this, you know, thing work?
It is very difficult. This year was particularly hard on a lot of producers because of the cool. We never really had a spring. It sort of wasn't there. I know, talking to quite a few of the poultry producers, there have been a lot of losses because of that.
And the rain, too, I think.
The rain at a critical time. There's a critical time when you're raising poultry, when they're losing their down feathers and then they're putting on their adult feathers. Mm-hmm. And if the weather turns unexpectedly at that time, you can have devastating losses. And it's very discouraging. And there's times you feel like crying because you think, oh my gosh, how can I deal with more loss? Mm-hmm. But then there's other times when you've got, you know, great grass growing and everything is the weather's beautiful and things are going well and the animals are doing great. And then you think, well, yes, this is why I do this. Mm-hmm. But it is very difficult sometimes.
Yeah. What about you guys? What do you have to deal with the weather?
Okay, well, what comes up for me is just that you're talking about your chickens and worrying about them. I am always in a constant state of anxiety whenever we leave the property. Right now, when we're at the farmer's market, just worrying about the babies, you know? Is everybody going to be okay?
Now, do you have guard dogs?
We don't yet.
Okay.
We do, you know, the fencing is okay, but we move the animals every night into a more secure location, you know, with better fencing. But we let them out into the open, larger pastures during the day.
During the day.
Yeah. If we were permanent to this particular ranch, we would definitely upgrade the fencing, even beyond what we've already done. But, yeah, that's, for me, it's that constant panic and getting up in the middle of the night when I hear coyotes and, you know, running out in my nightgown, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We totally believe in livestock guardian dogs. Mm-hmm. I totally understand your anxiety, yeah, and hearing those coyotes and running out, and you know what now? What's out there now? What's happened? We have Anatolian shepherds, and one's assigned to the goats, and our neighbors are losing lambs all the time. We've never lost any goats to the coyotes or mountain lions. We've seen them.
I love your story about you were coming back with Esme, and there's a mountain lion reclining,
wow,
with the ducks.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, it was actually with the goats.
Oh, with
it was
the goats,
in our,
okay,
goat pasture,
oh,
and
gosh.
I took out the Anatolian. It's about a 100-acre pasture with about 120 goats in it, and I took out the Anatolian because I was doing vaccinations for the dogs, and when I brought him back, there was a mountain lion sitting in this goat pasture, sunning itself. It was huge. It was up to, you know, way up here. And I let the dog loose, and he didn't see it, but he smelled it immediately. And it was like a rod went off, and he knew exactly where it was. He chased it off our property and onto the next ranch.
Mm.
But if you think of it, they're like... you know, when you read interviews with burglars, if there's a dog barking, even a little Joey dog, they're going to go to the next house.
Right.
And so the coyote, the mountain lion, they're going to go to the next ranch if there's a guardian dog that's staked out its territory and is giving the warning barks. We never worry about the coyotes and the mountain lions because of that. We were also losing our ducks to a great horned owl and hawks.
Yeah.
The owl was during the night and the hawks were during the day. We'd go running out in our bathrobes in the middle of the night,
right,
and there'd be this great big owl sitting up there, and you know, we'd yell and scream, and it would kind of look at us and like, huh, and then come right back as soon as we went in the house.
Right.
But once we put the dog out with the ducks, we haven't lost them to the owls.
Oh, wow.
And it's a non-lethal method of predator control, which is,
sure,
what really appeals to me.
Right.
Now,
one of
your Anatolians, Esme, is Grand Champion.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Well, I believe in having dogs that are bred to not only be excellent specimens of their breed, but are also functional. So I started showing the Anatolians. I've shown Salukis for years.
And your Salukis, I have to say. I meant to say this at the beginning of the show. You can go to both SalmonCreekRanch.com and Weiruch, Weirauch Farm.com to see the things that we're talking about. And there are pictures of... I mean, the Salukis have this sort of beauty. They make me cry. They're so gorgeous.
They're an ancient breed from the Middle East,
mm-hmm,
that was originally bred to hunt gazelle. And the Anatolian shepherds are an ancient breed from Turkey that were bred to guard the flock. So the prey drive has been bred out of them. The thing that makes retrievers retrieve and herding dogs herd is not there, which is why they can see a goat or a sheep running across the pasture and not want to chase it. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to be very calm dogs, because if they're too energetic, like a sporting dog or a golden retriever, they would get into trouble. They'd be starting to try to play with the stock, and you don't want that.
I was really surprised when I met the dogs, especially Esme. She just started...
She's my heart dog.
She started leaning on me immediately, which I learned meant she liked me. But this huge, huge, huge dog, not wired and not scary to me.
Yeah.
She was just so mellow to be around. But she was also clearly so on it, so completely alert and aware of everything that... was her domain.
We have visitors. We have a lot of visitors to the ranch for various reasons. And we notice when we're not there, the dogs really bark and scare people. But when we take someone out or we're with them, they're really good.
That's great.
We're quickly running out of time, and I'm going to rudely get into the file that you have brought with you. because last Sunday... August 21st in the Sonoma Living section is my article about the farm, and you can find it online, but if you happen to have the papers around, you know, if you haven't recycled your papers yet, there are some really good photographs. One is of the Scottish Highland sheep and
cow.
I knew that. Scottish Highland cattle. Scottish Highland cattle, which they're just so beautiful. But also inside on page 9, there's a picture. You're gathering duck eggs, right. And Esme is walking alongside of you. But there's also a picture of the remarkable treehouse. And you have, before the show's over, you have to tell us about the treehouse.
Well, the treehouse was, it was there when we bought the property, and we were told that it was used as an office for some of the previous owners. You go up a spiral staircase about 60 feet across two suspension bridges, and this treehouse has two sets of French doors and a double French doors, a deck, and a barbecue. It was furnished originally like in the L.L. Bean style, and it's got canvas and leather blinds in it, curtains, and it's lined in canvas, kind of World War II style.
Nice.
It's fantastic. It's one day we want to fix it up, but it's kind of not high up on the priority list.
Yeah,
right
now. I mean, it's a remarkable structure to see. I was just getting over a virus and so didn't go up, but one of these days I have to get to see it. Has to be the most amazing view from there. And you do welcome people to the farm, not to stay in the treehouse, but you'll have farm hikes, farm luncheons.
Right. We've had several hikes this summer, and we will continue to do that. Our farm tour schedule was a bit slack this year because we were so busy with everything, but we're hoping to have more before the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. And people can contact you by email.
Correct.
Asked to come out, learn all about both the Anatolian Shepherds and the Salukis.
Yes.
I know, are the puppies all gone now? You had five puppies.
Right, except for the one we're keeping.
You're keeping one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so great. If you've never seen a Saluki, either go to their website or just Google Saluki. They're a sighthound, and they're the endurance runners.
They're the endurance runners, right.
Of the sighthounds. Yeah. And so in that sense, they're distant cousins of Joey, because Joey's a little dachshund, and dachshunds are sighthounds, from what I understand. I hope they are, because I've built a whole mythology around it. And then Wyrick Farm, can people come visit?
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a number of farm tours this summer. One to three per month, but we're just tapering down.
Uh-huh.
So we have our final tour for this season until spring is on September 17th. But what people need to do is go to our farm website, and they have to go to the members page, and they have to become a member, which just means that you give us your contact info. So it's all private and by appointment. Uh-huh. And then once you let me know that you're interested in the tour, I'll correspond via email, and we'll settle out the details.
Okay, great. Yeah. And you guys also accept credit cards at the farmers market, and
we do
it in the most awesome way on an iPad. It was so fun to watch. And on that note, we are out of time. So again, it is salmoncreekranch.com and Wyrick Farm, Weirauch. You can find all of the duck eggs, duck meat, goat meat, and delicious beef at both the Santa Rosa Farmers Market on Saturdays and in San Rafael on Thursdays. And you can find the cheeses, San Rafael on Thursdays, Fairfax
Wednesdays,
and Sebastopol on Sundays.
Correct.
Well, thanks so much for taking time out on your Sunday evening to be on Mouthful. I've wanted to have you both for quite a while, and this has been great.
Thank you, Michelle.
And you all have a great weekend, or a great week, and meet me back here next Sunday for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour.
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too, and he'll sing
to the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says.
time for dinner now. Let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says.
So Lord, let praise be.
Let it be.
It's time for dinner now. Let's go.
We got some,
we got
beans.
Some beans and good cornbread.
Good
cornbread. Listen to what the preacher says.
So Lord, praise be.
Praise be.
You're listening to KRCB-FM Santa Rosa, community-powered radio at 91.1 and 90.9 FM.